Live from Dillahunty International Studios, Fish International Studios, and Goddard International Studios. It's the Atheist Experience on Adopted Christian Holiday Day. How you guys doing?
Hanging in there, Matt. How about you?
Oh, it's I'm going stir crazy, but it's so nice to be able to do stuff like this and my Twitch live streams and Facebook chats and other stuff. Otherwise, I think I would be bald from pulling hair out rather than from actually shaving it. And since barbershops are closed, I've got like way too much hair. But we're happy you guys are here on Easter, because this weekend the three of us were supposed to be in Phoenix doing the American Atheist Annual National Convention. So why don't you walk us through what happened, Nick, so that everybody knows why we're all sitting at home instead of getting hammered in Phoenix.
Well, I don't know if anyone's been following the news, but there's been some, you know, public health concerns around. And, you know, when we first started looking at this, I guess it's been about a month ago now, when Debbie kind of came in and said, you know, we were talking about coronavirus and, you know, seeing some of the numbers that are coming out of places like Seattle, and we're starting to see some events canceled. And, you know, have we gotten any questions from people? And almost as soon as she brought that up, we started fielding questions from members, people who were planning on attending the conference, saying, you know, what's the plan? Has anything changed? And so we really started talking seriously about contingencies and what we were going to do, number one, to protect the interests of our and the health and safety of all the people attending our conference.
Right.
But also just if things were out of our control, or there were stay-at-home orders or large gathering bans, as we're seeing now, you know, what we were going to do in the event that something like that happened. And so we wanted to plan for every possible outcome. We wanted to make sure that we had something we could do preemptively if we needed to, but also that, you know, if things were taken out of our hands, that we could respond appropriately. And, you know, we made the recommendation to the board of directors, which Matt is a member, in full disclosure. And we said, you know, we think this is going to turn into something really big, and that it's going to be really hard for us to put on the type of conference, the type of convention that the people in Phoenix expect, and that our members should expect, yeah, and that we frankly promised them, and that we want to have. We had lots of contingency options. We said maybe we could just do a one-day event, maybe we could just do everything online, or most things online, or you know, let's figure something out. But the more we talked about it, the less that seemed like a feasible option for right, the people that we wanted to put on display, kind of, you know, the local activism that's going on in Phoenix, and all the hard work that all those activists had done over the course of the last few years. We think it's really important to highlight that, and not being able to have a conference, you know, gutted us, but at the same time, we don't want people to have to choose between attending our conference and putting their lives on the line. And so, you know, we made what was, when we made it, a difficult decision, but as the days progressed and we tried to kind of nail down some details to make sure that we had a plan moving forward, rescheduling for the next year to make sure the hotel was available for that. By the time we spent maybe 2 or 3 days just trying to finalize those details, things had escalated so far that, you know, it was the only decision we could have made. And we were fortunate that we were able to make that decision. You know, I think it was the right one.
So what you're really saying is it was a damn good idea to bring Debbie on as a vice president. I to see this before we started getting, you know, emails.
I say that every day, actually. It's a damn good idea that we brought Debbie on board. But yeah, you know, it's part of her job, and part of what we all do here is try to anticipate where things can go sideways. You know, Allison, our other vice president, who works in the legal and policy side, you know, she does the same thing, except it's Congress. So I don't know what's harder to predict what's going to happen, 51 state and territorial legislatures plus Congress, or a brainless, lifeless virus. Kind of hard to determine which one's going to act irrationally.
Sorry, I had to throw in a cheap Trump joke there. So,
that's all right.
Debbie, How did you develop your psychic powers to determine that it was in our best, that we were about to have contact with people who were going to be wondering about what was going to happen?
Can I just say, like, this was so stressful. It was really the most stressful weekend I experienced in a while. Was the first week of March, we went in saying, like, oh, you know, something's happening, but oh well. By that, I think it was Wednesday of that first week of March is when I realized, shit, this yeah. might be a big freaking deal. And before we finished booking all of the flights and before we finished lining up all these other things, and, you know, there were some expenses coming up that we would have to commit to, like the AV contract, things like that. I was like, we might not be able to have a conference, you guys. What do we do?
Yeah.
And we decided to give ourselves, I don't know, 5 days or something to see how things developed. And yeah, over that weekend, things certainly escalated a lot. And that was the first I followed the news closely. And so all those early stories about what was coming down the pike were, I was reading every single one I could find. And by Monday, we were like, well, this seems like a thing. Like,
yeah, I've gotten to a point where I feel kind of, I wasn't paying enough attention, because literally March 1st, I was in New York City with my girlfriend having a discussion with Dinesh D'Souza, and she had actually been paying attention to the news and I had not. I'd been doing nothing but like, we're going to have this conversation. We're going to go to New York. We're going to have fun. And so we're walking around New York City and she's like, you know, here's some hand sanitizer, wash your hands. I'm really worried about this. And I was like, you know, it's not here and there's nothing. And then we get back home. And immediately after getting back to Austin, the news starts coming in about, you know, New York City being essentially ground zero for COVID's introduction into the United States. So we basically quarantined ourselves at my place for 2 weeks just to make sure that we were asymptomatic and everything else. And that was all happening around the same time the ACA was making decisions about DEFCON levels and ultimately getting to the point where there's nobody in the building, although there's one person in the building right now. And that's when the email came in to the American Atheist Board saying, you know, hey, here's what we've been talking about. Here's what we're thinking. What do we think we should do? And I'm really proud of the fact, not only that, you know, Debbie was watching this and brought it up, but the full team evaluated all the possibilities and came up with a plan that I think, while it's incredibly frustrating for those people who are like, oh, we really wanted to go to Phoenix. I'm glad I'm not in Phoenix right now. I'd much rather be at home and fairly safe. But the plan was to not cancel the convention, but postpone it for 1 year. So instead of doing Phoenix in 2020, we will be in Phoenix in 2021, because that city and those volunteers and those activists deserve a good convention. And so now we've got a whole extra year to make sure, which means I guess your guys' work just increased a little bit, because now you've got to show up in Phoenix next year with like a 2 years worth of convention planning show.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we're really cognizant of that. And the last point you just made there is exactly what was going through our mind, is we want to make sure that people have the type of event that they've come to expect from American Atheists. And we didn't want it to be just sort of a hall of itself, just, you know, everyone standing 6 feet apart. Because one of the most important parts of this, and I think you know this as well as anyone, Matt, is actually being in the room with each other and having the social experience. It's not just the speakers. It's not just the events. It's being a part of all of this together and being in the same room with all these people who you haven't seen for the last year or more, and meeting new people and connecting with people in your own community. And so that's why we wanted to make sure that we were putting on the best event we could. And unfortunately, that just wasn't possible this year. But that's why we're going back next year.
Yeah, Allison and I were talking about that yesterday during the ACA's first game night, where we played Quiplash, and Nick was there. And
you did really well, Matt. I got great showing.
Yes, I came in dead last, but I feel like I won, because any answer that said that included Matt's balls evidently won every single round. I mean, there were people who rode to victory on Matt's balls.
Yeah, you get at least sympathetic points from that, so that helps. Yeah,
but it was a good fun time. Now, you know, Allison and I were talking yesterday about, you know, just looking forward to going there to see the people you haven't seen in a while and everything else. but it's not, we're not going to have to wait an entire year for things coming out of American Atheists. You guys are working on a town hall, you know, online event now. I know you don't have it all planned out, but if you want to run through kind of the basic thoughts there and when we can expect it.
So keep an eye out for this. We're working on some announcements for it, but our plan right now is to have a virtual town hall to kind of take some of the part of the member meeting so we can share from American Atheists with our members and supporters a little bit about what we're working on. The tentative date for that is the 28th. So that'll be in about 2 weeks. We're having a board meeting next week, and we want to be able to share with folks some plans for the next year. But just keep an eye on our social media for some of the details about that, including the link and where that'll all be. We're also working on, you know, getting out some content from the really great speakers that we had lined up to speak at our conference, who have, you know, just tons of amazing things to share with folks, work that they've done, research that they've done, stories that they've, you know, compiled. So we've spoken with Catherine Stewart and Chris Cameron and Chrissy Stroop and a number of other folks who were on the agenda for this conference to come and be a part of a sort of speaker series. And we're working on the details of that, but we're aiming to have some of that out this summer, you know, as we kind of get through all of this with getting back into some level of normalcy. But then we also have a lot of projects that are, you know, going to continue coming out. We have the first, Allison mentioned this yesterday, but we'll have the first report from our big survey that we did, the U.S. Secular Survey. And that'll be, again, in the next few weeks here, some really exciting results from that survey. And then just all the other stuff that's going on, including, you know, the Paycheck Protection Program trying to subsidize churches. So, you know, that's, you know, just a little side project that we're working on right now is preventing the literal destruction of the Establishment Clause.
So. Yeah, and I appreciate the not quite, so it was subtle to everybody else, but it wasn't subtle to me. Nick was basically reminding me that I have a board meeting next weekend.
Sliding in the reminders.
In case, you know, it's not like I had anywhere else to be. So anybody who doesn't show up for this one remotely, there's something wrong. Maybe they're sick. So here's what we're going to do. We've got more than full lines. Just as a reminder to the people who are watching the show, yes, we got a slight late start, but if you knew what hoops our tech crew was jumping through to get us, you know, on the air at all, you would be impressed that we only missed it by, you know, like 8 or 9 minutes.
Yeah, give them a round of applause for real.
Like, oh, everything just broke. Well, let me send somebody to the building. Let me reboot this machine and do that. It's all going well. And we have full lines, more than full lines. When we're there in the studio, there's only 6 lines available, but we have, it looks like, I don't know, maybe a dozen callers that have been screened and are waiting. So I figure we'll get to that. As a reminder, because Nick and Debbie don't do this on a regular basis, things are going to work a little more slowly than they do even when we're in the studio. I'm going to make judicious use of putting people on hold because not everybody's phone system does full duplex right, so you can't always hear the other person talking. So if you'll know if we put you on hold. There'll be a beep when you come back in. And for the three of us, I mean, just I'm going to let I'm sure I will talk more than anybody just because that's who the hell I am. But I'm going to let you guys kind of address callers as much as possible. And I figure since I'm the only one that can actually see this right now, we'll go ahead and start with Guardian, Ottawa, Canada. And it says here, according to the screener, it's necessary to have certain rules. Some people need a God to define these rules. Some don't. I'm not quite sure. Did you have a question, or was that just the statement you wanted to make?
That's, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. That was an introductory statement. So basically, I just wanted to say, start by saying that I am the ultimate atheist myself, and I do not, you know, from the subatomic particles to society, to me, it's all emergent properties from the bottom all the way up. And you know, at each level, you would have certain rules, you would have certain methods that would allow, you know, a system to work. So basically, we're just, you know, we're just gears in a system, and I'm materialist all the way through. Now, so basically, I was actually looking at believers a little bit, just saying, how can they believe this shit? How would they believe this God thing and everything like that? And I started to think myself, given that everything is just an emergent property, the fact that I have love for my wife and my kids, the fact that I have certain things that I would not do, these arguably would be emergent properties as well and can be as true or as untrue as a belief in God.
So I fully acknowledge that there are things that we would identify as emergent properties, but I wouldn't go so far as to say everything is an emergent property. But I'm not quite sure.
I would say go ahead.
I'm just not quite sure what, because it seemed like from what the call screener typed in that you're essentially saying some people need a God to define rules. Well, first of all, that would imply that there is a God defining the rules, because as far as I can tell, what's happening is that human beings are defining the rules and claiming that they come from a God. And so all we're really saying is some humans prefer rules being handed to them by somebody rather than discovering or thinking about them themselves.
Correct. But again, I'm just looking at what is true. What as an atheist, some things to me are true, such as, you know, the love I have for my wife and for my kids. This is very true, and to me it's like a tangible thing. But in fact, it's not. It's just, you know, it's something that's in my brain, and if you push it really hard, one could say that it's not even true. It doesn't really exist. It's just a state within my brain.
Sure, but that's different from,
And I was going to say, just because it's in your brain doesn't make it untrue. Everything that we experience is filtered through that lens, and is in some ways reactions to, you know, chemical stimuli or whatever it is. It doesn't mean that it's less true. And I think you're kind of mixing terms a little bit of what's true versus what's material. That having been said, there are certainly things that we can do to look at brain chemistry when people are experiencing certain emotions, and so that doesn't separate it completely out from the physical realm either. I don't want to speak for Matt, but I think I'm probably as confused as you are about what your point is exactly. So,
I mean, if it's just that,
religions have utility. My point was that I was looking at believers, and I was saying, you know, what are they thinking about when I have myself have certain beliefs and wants and needs that are arguably not true either. I guess we all have something that we believe in and something that we want, and some people get it from God. I don't, but some people do. It kind of made me a little bit made me think that, well, maybe I'm not that altogether, you know, maybe I don't have a full understanding of the whole thing, because
I would just add that I don't think that what you're describing here is that some people have similar emotional reactions that those of us that don't believe in God. So you're saying your emotional reaction, the way that your brain chemistry changes as a result of your love for your wife, for example, or, you know, standing in front of a beautiful vista, people experience similar changes in brain chemistry and similar experiences through their perception or their belief in God. I don't think that's a controversial position. I think that that's exactly what a lot of folks will say is, you know, how they feel when they're thinking about God. It doesn't have anything to do with whether or not God exists. It certainly just is something to do with our emotional connection to perceptions. It doesn't have any bearing on whether or not it's true. But I also don't think it has any negative bearing on whether or not your love of your wife or your other loved ones is any less true, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, religions have utility in the sense that they provide some structure. However, if I say I love my wife or I love my girlfriend, I'm talking about a real experience that I'm having and potentially sharing with another real person.
Right.
And that's a little different from saying there's somebody who's timeless, spaceless, loves me, wants to impose justice, created everything, and really doesn't want me to have sex with a dude.
Or eat shellfish. Don't forget that.
Yeah, shellfish. They're slightly different. There is something there. The thing I was concerned about when I first read the call screener's note is that I thought you were saying there are some people who need a God or need the perception of a God in order to understand things or be moral, whereas the rest of us don't. And that is an incredibly arrogant an incorrect position to hold. And, you know, I'm not saying you actually hold that, but it's really annoying when, you know, atheists, particularly someone like me, who I used to be religious, I believed sincerely, and now I don't. And if I were just to run around, you know, saying, oh, well, I was, you know, suffering from mental illness or an inability to process things, or I was just stupid back then or whatever else. I mean, that's not accurate, but also it would be wrong for me to suggest that there are people out there. I don't need religion anymore. I have graduated to a point where I don't need it, but you do. And I want to make sure we kind of squash that notion at all opportunities, because there are people, anybody I would hope, is potentially someone who can find their way out of religion. I don't know if Debbie, if you had anything to add before we go on to another one.
I was wondering about the rules part. And I think that's one of the differences here is, you know, believing that your mother doesn't lie to you or that you love your wife and your wife loves you is different than thinking the only reason people can be good is because God gave us rules to follow. So I think the call screener's note had something about rules, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's correct. And I don't think I stated it right. I think I was thinking of more, you know, emergent properties and each layer has having certain rules and everything like that. But that's, I don't think that I framed it right.
Yeah. All right, Guardy. I appreciate the call. We're going to move on to some other calls right now, but you take care of yourself and, you know, the people around you, make sure you are staying healthy and following whatever rules are in place in your particular area, and maybe going above and beyond some of that, because we've had, like, there's weirdness. I saw somebody came in, and is it Kansas where the Supreme Court sided with the governor that the governor is allowed to limit church attendance to people under?
Well, and it's, so this is merely on a, this was simply a procedural question. The case that was raised. So the way Kansas works is a little strange. Kansas has what's called I think it's a legislative council that can overrule or can oversee the governor's actions on certain executive activities that go on, but empowers only the legislature to overturn executive action. And essentially what happened is the legislature said, we delegate that authority to this legislative council. And the legislative council said, nope, we're not allowing the governor to do this. And the governor went to the Supreme Court of the state and said, hey, wait a second, only the full legislature can overrule my actions. And so you need to put my executive action back into place. So yeah. I don't believe it went all the way to the full question of whether or not the governor had the authority to limit religious gatherings. As a sidebar, yes, she does. But in this case, it was strictly, I believe, on the procedural grounds of whether or not the legislative council had the authority to overrule the governor. And on that question, the answer is most certainly no.
And then evidently immediately after this, Texas Governor Greg Abbott decided to go ahead and make an exception so that people could go to church and infect each other today. Are you guys getting reports in all day long from people who are like, look at all these people at the church in my town?
Yeah, we are. Yeah. And a lot of our state, the great thing that we have at American Atheists are just this amazing network of state volunteers, our state directors, and assistant state directors that keep an eye on this sort of thing. And a lot of them are doing the right thing and contacting health officials and saying, hey, there's a gathering of 400 people at this church. They're ignoring the stay-at-home order in a state where there is no exception. Please come do something about it. And unfortunately, too many health departments are worried about the optics of shutting down a large gathering on Easter Sunday, which on the one hand I understand, but on the other hand, when 40 of those 100 people end up infected with the coronavirus and 20 of them end up dead because they're all over 70, I think they're going to not care so much about the optics of, you know, enforcing these rules and going enforcing a twisted interpretation of the Constitution. The free exercise clause is not a death pact. It is not absolute. The Supreme Court has said for the entire history of the United States, even until now, despite some of the rulings we've seen recently, that the free exercise clause is not universal, that the government can, in fact, put limits on free expression when it has a compelling interest. And that interest right now is preventing millions of people from dying. And that's a pretty compelling interest.
It's funny because we talk about the optics of it. And on the one hand, there's the optics of, hey, We ain't afraid of no virus. Jesus will protect us. Let's Jesus go ahead blood. And go to church.
Covered in Jesus' blood.
But yeah, but the risk then is that if you do that and people wind up sick, now all of a sudden it exposes that perhaps, you know, Jesus doesn't have your back as much. Yeah. And yet it would seem to me that the optics would be overall good to say, hey, we're going to follow what the health experts and the government are putting in place, because, you know, first of all, we can go to that passage that says all governing authorities are appointed by God and you know, you should be obeying them. But also, God is everywhere and Jesus is everywhere. And so we can worship just as well from home as we could getting together. This is about not about the truth of the religion or orthodoxy. This is about orthopraxy. This is about people who are convinced that I must go to a particular building on Easter and worship and praise, and God will protect me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the risk right now, is the people that are using this both as like a sign of faith, not just in the religion, but also in that kind of the political side of things, where this, you know, I'm infecting all my loved ones with a highly contagious virus to own the libs is kind of the attitude that too many people have right now. And I'd much rather people were listening to medical professionals and what science is saying. And I will say, you know, 95% probably of churches are doing the right thing and have canceled their in-person gatherings. And so, you know, I know that's tough. Like, I don't want to be flippant about this, but I know it's easy for us just to say, well, you know, stay the fuck home. And don't spread this disease. I understand. I have some level of empathy for people who are, you know, really feeling the hurt right now and need community and really want to connect with the people that they're closest with, who are oftentimes the people who are part of their congregation. And, you know, but at the same time, we're all going through a lot of that right now. And so what folks need to do is just do what the health professionals are saying. And that is, large gatherings are a really bad idea right now. So please don't do them.
Yeah, it's like there's a dueling true Christian, I guess, kind of thing going on here, where it's, oh, no, God will protect me. I'm covered in the blood of Jesus. Our church is safe. And then you have a preacher who says that, you know, this whole thing's a hoax, and then he winds up dying of COVID-19. Right. And so there's no way to win this, because all somebody else has to do is say, well, he clearly wasn't a true Christian. It's not his church that's the right church. It's my church that's the right church. And now the church that becomes the right one is the one where the least people got infected, I guess. Yeah. I don't even understand, you know, the mentality. I got an email, kind of quasi joke today, from an atheist pointing out that Boris Johnson was released from the hospital today as an Easter miracle or something. And I was like, oh man, let's it's not the way science and diseases work. For us to be running around, hey, you know what? Nobody in American Atheists is sick, and nobody in the atheist community of Austin's sick. We win.
It's a sign. Yeah.
Yeah, we do win, but it's not because there's some divine guidance or protector or punisher. Let's go to, we've got DeWitt in Seattle. You are on with Nick Fish, Debbie Goddard, and Matt Delaney, and evidently you called in to let us know that Jesus is alive and that's the truth.
I just kind of wanted to ask you, in the sense that, since, you know, it's Easter today, and I just wanted to show you some evidence, or not evidence, but just like claims that historians have made of the validity of Jesus being real and then also dying and then coming back and then just like that.
So if it's not evidence, if it's just a bunch of claims, why would we care?
In the sense that, like, why would you agree that Jesus was someone that did exist?
I have no problem with that notion, but I don't think that there's necessarily a knockdown solid case that Jesus existed.
Okay, but like, obviously, you don't think that he's a God or anything like that, or you ever like the eyewitness accounts of, you know, people seeing him and performing miracles, and the fact that he rose from the dead. Eyewitness accounts of that happening after all that. I know it's not like 100% fact, but just, would you just dismiss historians and New Testament scholars looking at it and just saying that there is something here?
I'd say fact and eyewitness are both doing a lot of heavy lifting in what you just said.
Yeah, but to say there's something here, I agree. There's something there. Yeah. There are stories there.
But it's kind of from like historians kind of saying that there is a good chance that this actually did happen.
No, so that's not the way it works to assess history. All historians can do is tell us, hey, we have really good evidence that a whole bunch of people believed this to be the case. Without evidence that it is the case, you're still just talking about, yeah, there's a bunch of people who believed it. And that's wholly unsurprising. The one of the most popular religious movements ever had people who believed it. But there are people who genuinely believe that Elvis didn't die. And historians will tell you, yep, there's a bunch of people who are saying that Elvis didn't die and Elvis was spotted here and Elvis was spotted there. That doesn't mean that the underlying story is true.
Okay. But like you said, Jesus Christ could be real, right? He could be someone that did exist.
Well,
or do you think that?
Yeah. Well, the thing I was going to say is we know that people like, the people who founded the Mormon religion existed. They were real people. We know that Joseph Smith and all of them and Brigham Young existed. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that they were just making shit up and willfully misreading and misinterpreting and mistranslating words on fake scrolls. I mean, there are millions of people who are Mormons and they believe it wholeheartedly. And there were people who corroborated the beliefs of the Mormons who were around at the founding of the Mormon Church. But the fact is that like the New York Times was publishing when the Mormon Church was founded, right? And people still believe these things. There were people who, there are reports of the fraud that was going on by the founders of that religion, but it doesn't dissuade people from believing it. The fact that people believe it, as Matt said, isn't what makes it true or not. Is it true? The eyewitness, as you say, testimony in this case isn't actually eyewitness testimony. It's oral tradition that was passed down for a few hundred years and then written down.
Yeah, what do you think is eyewitness, by the way?
I'm just saying what historians have said is that there were eyewitness accounts of people seeing Jesus after he had died. And then I actually haven't looked deep into it. I'm just going with what the historians have said.
I no longer want to hear the word historian because...
Okay.
If we look at the New Testament... I don't care about New Testament scholars either, because I can look directly at the New Testament. And so if you just look at the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, we have no idea who wrote those. They aren't eyewitness accounts, and they tell stories about eyewitness accounts. And there's no external sources that confirm any sort of eyewitness accounts. So the best thing historians can do is look at the New Testament and say, yep, this has the hallmarks of people who are telling the stories second, third hand from people who claim to be eyewitnesses. But that would be fine if it was about a government decision, a battle, something that is trivial. When you start saying, hey, here's somebody who claimed to be God, performed miracles, died, and was resurrected, and we have eyewitnesses. Unfortunately, we have no accounts from those eyewitnesses. We only have secondary and tertiary accounts from people who supposedly talk to these people. How can that ever be enough to reasonably confirm that this is a true story?
To be honest, I'm really not sure. I might have to look more into that.
Cool. Go do that. And by all means, call us back. We appreciate it. And you know, we don't necessarily have all the answers either. It's just my position. And I don't know. By the way, Debbie, Nick, either one of you mythicists? That
no.
Okay. So you have three people here who aren't mythicists. Now, none of us are necessarily convinced that Jesus did not exist. There are atheists. I can think of, Stephen Carrier. I was just Stephen Carrier. Carrier, David Fitzgerald, my good friend Frank, who do actually hold those views. I've moderated a debate on mythicism before. I think all of us would be fine with the notion that, yeah, okay, we're telling stories about a person and there may actually be a real person there, but that doesn't have any bearing on whether or not the stories told about them are real. It's like as a magician, and Debbie can vouch for this as well, when somebody sees a magician do a trick, the stories they tell after the trick are better than what that guy or girl could have done in the first place. And it's like, you know, it's like a fishtail, it grows. Oh yeah. Well, my savior didn't just like, you know, die of pneumonia and was resurrected. He was actually hung on a cross and with a crown of thorns and stabbed with a spear and, you know,
upside down.
Yeah. That would be cool. All right. So we have, I'm trying to get to the next caller here. Wow. So this one, I apologize in advance. If, if this is only for me, but we have Amin in Dallas, Texas, who said that God exists and wanted them to call. So how you doing, Amin?
I'm doing great, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you for...
How do you know God wants you to call the show?
Well, okay, let me explain this. The way I wanted God told me to call is he put it in my spirit.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
It is my spirit, or what you call, some people call it a gut feeling.
I'm not able to understand what you're saying, and I apologize. I don't know if it's an issue with the phone, but... How do you know that God wanted you to call?
Okay. Instinct, gut feeling. I call it Holy Spirit.
Okay. It's not really an answer.
So did you get the answer?
So I asked you how you know God wanted you to call, and your answer seemed to be the Holy Spirit.
Yes, sir.
Okay. How do you know that there's a Holy Spirit and that it told you God wanted to call you to call?
It's really very hard to explain for other person. For example,
why would God want you to call? Why would God want you to call if it's difficult to explain? Because it would seem that if God had an important message for somebody like me, Nick, Debbie, somebody active in the atheist community, that he could convey this message to you in such a way that you could clearly and easily explain the message. Because otherwise, it seems like God is punking you, like God is setting you up to call into a show so that the only thing that you can actually say is, I'm convinced the Holy Spirit wanted me to call, but it's very, very difficult to explain. Why would God want you to call to not be able to have a productive conversation?
Okay. When I say it's difficult to understand is, knowing that your stand regarding the God, you know, you have to believe first in order to understand.
You have to believe first. So you're suggesting that God is real, and that God, through the Holy Spirit, wanted you to call the show on a phone line that is incredibly difficult to understand, with a subject that's difficult to understand, and your case for that is you have to believe first. Is your God an idiot?
No, sir. Okay, let me say this. You see, you don't have to know. You don't have to know to believe, but you have to believe to know.
I think you just answered my question. Yeah. All right, so moving on, we've got, there's a little bit of slow click here, but Murray in Richmond, Indiana wants to know, without God, how can you get through all this? Go ahead, Murray, you're on with Debbie, Nick, and Matt.
Hi, I just kind of recently decided that atheism was true and that, you know, and at first I was really happy to look at the stuff that beat up on Christianity. But now it's like it seems real to me that it's right, and I guess I could call myself an atheist now. But it's always before in my life there was if something was going wrong, I could talk to God and say that God will protect me, and then I'd be confident, like I wouldn't get the virus. But now it's like I don't have that comfort anymore. And it's like, I don't know how to deal with it. Any ideas?
So once upon a time, you thought God would protect you from the virus, and now you realize that God's not going to protect you from the virus. That sounds like a good thing, the recognition that you once thought you were safe when you really weren't.
But now it's like, how do I deal with the fear?
Well,
go ahead, Debbie.
No, I respect that question. I think I've encountered many, usually newer atheists, often facing something difficult in their lives, who are used to having the comfort and being able to draw strength from their belief in God and their relationship with Jesus, things like that. And that usually it's like that first couple of years are the scariest, because, you know, someone close to them might die and they say, oh, I used to have comfort in this fact that, from my understanding, that they'd be in heaven, right? And I'd get to see them again. And now I find this like cold and empty because I won't get to see them again. And that's not easy, right? Often church communities provide support. You have to kind of figure out again, like what's true and how things work and make the pieces fit together. So I wanted to acknowledge, I guess, that especially for newer atheists who are used to thinking of the world a different kind of way, that's legit. A lot of our communities have people in them, atheist communities out there online too, who come in because they're facing something difficult and they want to talk to others about how they face it. Besides alcohol, which I think a lot of a decent number of us also have communities and
in your hand, alcohol for right.
in your hand. Yeah, hand sanitizer. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. I mean, I had once I was a few years ago facing some difficult things and I looked into therapy. I had a therapist suggest, you know, maybe one of your problems is your atheism, because if people believe in God, they have something that they can draw strength from and lean on. And I said, in response, I would argue they're not drawing strength from God. They're drawing strength from their belief in God and their belief that there's a reason for these things and their belief that someone out there, something out there is looking after them and cares about them. And I think for many of us, we draw that strength from the relationships we have and, you know, knowing that our friends and our family care about us and that we're important to them and they're important to us and our communities are important. I think that's how it makes sense to me. But that's not to say that there's never darkness out there or that mindful meditation isn't helpful sometimes, and it's alcohol.
Yeah, one of the things about fear is that fear gets a bad rap. Right. Oh, you're afraid. Well, sometimes what we talk about as fear is actually a rational assessment. And so if you know that there are certain risks, are you afraid of putting on a blindfold and walking across a busy highway? Because I would be. And if I were convinced that I could put on a blindfold and walk across a busy highway because God was protecting me, if I had had that kind of mindset for a long time, realizing that I no longer have any reason to believe that God's protecting me, that would bring in the fear. But the fear is necessary. It's what convinces you, hey, let's take off the blindfold so that we can assess things and make a reasonable set a reasonable course of action for crossing that street such that we minimize the risk. So it's not that it's bad to be afraid. You are right to be afraid. I have people close to me who are absolutely terrified of what's going on with this virus. I am not terrified. I am cautious and alert. I'm not overly anxious about it. I am taking the best precautions that I can. And then I recognize that I can't protect myself against everything. I can only take the best steps that I can take. And if I get sick, at least it'll happen knowing that I did as much as I could, hopefully, to avoid it. But running around believing, like there's that video that made the rounds last week of a woman pulling into a church saying that she's going to church and she's covered in the blood of Jesus. She's an idiot who has a mentality. Well, all right, let me correct that. What she's doing is incredibly dangerous. And it doesn't matter whether or not she believes that she's covered in the blood. She might be covered in the virus and she might be infecting other people, or she might be putting herself in a position to be infected. And the reason that she's doing that is because a religion has removed a rational fear from her mind and replaced it with confidence that isn't supported by the evidence. And you are in the exact opposite position. You are now dealing with what is a rational fear and trying to figure out how to cope with it. Yep. And I've been alone in my house now for a couple of weeks, and it's awful. Apart from, you know, being able to interact with people online, the just being locked in alone is a lot to handle. And I was as fearful about this situation as some other people are, I would be going a little stir crazy right now. And perhaps I am. I don't know.
Yeah. Two things that I just wanted to point out very quickly were as resources is Recovering from Religion and their Secular Therapy Project. I think a lot of us, certainly in our community, have had that experience of, okay, what now? And what comes after this? And have had the experience, unfortunately, that Debbie had, where someone that you go to help you cope or to talk through some of these feelings and some of these concerns will say something incredibly inappropriate or will really denigrate your identity as a non-religious person or as an atheist. And that's really unfortunate and not acceptable and is, you know, exactly the opposite from what they are supposed to be doing. And so we encourage folks to check out Recovering from Religion, If you, I believe their website is just recoveringfromreligion.org, and they have a project there, uh-huh. called the Secular Therapy Project, that is really helpful. And, you know, one of the things that folks coming out of religion have told me a lot, and this is something that I think a lot of us deal with as well, is the stigma surrounding mental health and right. how to cope with these things. It's not a failing, and too many churches tell people that if you're going to therapy, if you're not just listening to your pastor, that that's some sort of personal moral failing. And I want to reassure you, it's not. A few years ago, I was assaulted by five people walking home from my car less than half a block on a Wednesday night. And, you know, I was having, I was fine. I mean, I went to the ER and I had, you know, some fractures and stitches and all that and some chipped teeth. But after the fact, I was having sort of recurring issues around just anger and rage if I couldn't find a parking spot that was close to my house, right? And I went to a therapist that did cognitive behavioral therapy. And he said one of the things that was just so, you know, illustrative for me was the idea that, to piggyback on what Matt said, that fear is not a failing. That fear is not an irrational response, even though in the moment, like rationally, I knew I was very unlikely to be jumped again because it hadn't happened 4 years previously. And it probably wouldn't happen again. It's still something that the back of your mind, you know, evolutionarily, it springs up, right? Because that false positive of, I should take extra precautions right now is much less damaging than a false negative of, oh, this is probably fine, and then getting eaten by a tiger or whatever. And so helping me kind of realize that, focus on the physical aspects of that feeling in my body, and how to correct or how to adjust that, how to embrace those feelings, and what that did for me was really helpful. And so I'm certainly not a medical or a mental health professional, but I would recommend speaking with one if you have the means and the capacity to do so. There's a lot of really great teletherapy that's happening right now where you can just, you know, speak with a counselor, even if it's an informal setting, you know, help process that. And it's not a failing. It's a great thing to do. You know, I think everybody should get some therapy occasionally.
I'm not against therapy. In fact, I see a therapist a lot, right. But she's a Christian and it's hard to talk to her about this.
Yeah. I'm sorry that's the case, because it is too often the case that it's hard to broach those subjects, but hopefully if they're not, if they're a professional, they won't let that infiltrate their discussions with you, or change the advice that they would give or help, because they're supposed to be helping you work through things, not giving you advice. My mistake. But if you need extra resources, certainly the Secular Therapy Project and Recovering from Religion does great work.
I tell you this, Mary, I'm more afraid in some ways of what's going to happen after the crisis is over and the broader impact of this with regard, you know, do we enter another depression? How do we, you know, not just economic recovery, but social recovery as well. You know, this has stalled not just production of goods, but also it has stalled progress on certain initiatives. And maybe there are some incredibly good things that have come out of it. Maybe there are some horrific things that have come out of it. How's it going to impact the elections? There's a lot to be afraid of, and most of those fears are rational. The difference is in how you allow those rational fears to impact your life. If you allow them to take over to where you can no longer be productive or do anything, you're giving in to the irrational portion of the fear. If you allow them to change your actions and behaviors such that you are taking the best precautions, that you are being wise with how you spend money, that you are washing your hands and sheltering in place and those things, that is the rational course with fear. And it's there's nothing wrong with being afraid of what's going to happen.
Okay. Cat just scratched me. This is a whole new way of living. And, you know, I'm still putting my past in this perspective at times about, and you know, I've talked to you a couple times and saw you at the convention, and that's really helped. It's just a lifetime of believing God, and now, you know, I don't, and I see really good reasons why I shouldn't. It's just new. Everything seems new now.
Yep.
And you are not at all alone. It just take a quick look through a number of the callers that have come in or emails with concerns. And actually, it was some people with concerns like you that initially contacted Debbie that resulted in us postponing the American Atheist Convention because basically there were rational fears, especially, you know, American Atheist has a number of members who are older and that have been at the convention every year for the last 40 years or whatever. And they're the highest risk category. And so now that's like, hey, you know, I'm 70. They put me in this risk category. I don't know that it makes sense for me to go to a convention around a whole bunch of other people.
Yeah. Or people with you know, compromised immune systems for any number of reasons. People with disabilities and even people with, you know, who
diabetes.
I was going to say diabetes, respiratory issues, or people who have families with any of those above issues, right, that live with them. And so, Murray, you're certainly not alone. And I just want to emphasize that when we did our survey of about 35, almost 35,000 atheists and non-religious people across the country, the feelings that you're experiencing you're not alone in them. It is a huge change. And I just want to commend you and say, I know it's really tough and you're not going through it alone. And if you can find people to just talk to and be part of a community with those.
Head up the Discord server.
Yeah. And just find people to talk to, because sometimes that's the best way to work through these problems and to address the concerns that you're facing is just to have someone you can lean on. And that's a lot of what church provides. And Debbie said it, I think, perfectly, that it's not it's not actually God that's giving people strength. It's people's belief that someone is watching out for them and cares about them. And I just want to, you know, let you know that there are a lot of people out here that care about you care about what happens to you. And that's, you know, that's what being part of a community is all about. And so, if you're not part of a formal community, we found that people who were part of a local group of some kind had much better outcomes in terms of mental health, depression, and so on, and felt a lot more connected to what was going on by being members of those communities. Just to tease some results of our survey and answering your question here, but that I think is a really powerful thing. So if you're not yet part of a community, I hope you can find one. And if there's not a community in your town, this is one of those cases where if you have the capacity to build it, they certainly will come. There are tons of people I guarantee, in your town, in your county, wherever you are.
Yeah. In the meantime, stay reasonably scared. Reasonably scared and find some people you can interact with and know that, you're not alone.
Yeah.
Right. So the fear isn't bad. Like I'm over 60 and I have diabetes, so I'm in the high risk group. So I've been super careful.
Yeah.
But
it sounds like you're doing what you need to do.
Yep.
I guess the fear is not a bad thing then.
No.
Not at all. And I appreciate the call, Murray. We're going to go on to a couple of the people,
okay. But
stay reasonably scared. It's kind of an irony, leveraging off what Debbie said. You know, when I was a believer and I thought that God was protecting me, one of the things that made this valuable wasn't just the belief. It was the community around that was like, yes, God's got you. God's got you. God's got you. And I remember kind of sarcastic comments from people saying, oh, well, what would the atheist community be doing? God doesn't have you. Nobody's got you. You're all alone. That's not what the atheist community says at all, which is, it's saying, yes, the universe doesn't give a rat's ass about you, but we do.
Right.
And we are the only ones that can do anything to make it better.
Yeah. That's, I think, one of the most valuable things I've carried with me from Christian things is the Serenity Prayer. But a secular version. So can I do something about this thing that's freaking me out or, causing me to stay up late at night? No, then probably I should stop reading articles on my computer at 2 a.m. right. about it. And maybe I should focus on the things. You're laughing because you do this.
Yeah, I think we both are laughing because we both do this.
Right, and maybe I should focus more on the things that I can do. And that includes taking care of my own physical and mental health. And that includes activism. Like I didn't pay attention to the details of I didn't watch the impeachment trial, because I had other things to do, and I was like, I can't do much about this. I can elect someone, I can respond to action alerts, but I don't need to follow every moment of this trial.
Right.
It brings me down. So let me put more energy into the things I can do something about. Yeah. That's
I'd much
why I do activism.
I'd much rather get my news from Seth Meyers anyway.
Yeah.
Time for a closer look. Boom. That's a nugget I can digest without feeling overwhelmed. Yeah. Is there anything I can do about this? If not, is there something I might be able to do about it in the future? If not, is there something I could do now that might allow me to do something about it in the future? And that's the level at which I stop worrying about it. If I don't see a path forward to dealing with this, it's not like there aren't 43 other problems in my face that I might actually be able to address. So,
yeah.
We've got Markel in Augusta, Georgia, wants to tell us the story of his pre-existence. Are you there?
Okay. Yes, I'm fine. What about y'all?
Well, it's Easter, and we're stuck in the house avoiding the virus, but we managed to get a show up and running with two people I greatly admire, who I think might be keen to hear the story of your pre-existence, because I'm not fully sure I understand what you mean.
Well, it's a blessing to be alive, but yes, a pre-existence is something that a lot of people, I'm pretty sure, that wouldn't understand because of it was never written in like any religion, and it's a story that I only can speak on.
So nobody else has a pre-existence?
No.
You're the only person in all of history that has a pre-existence?
Yes.
Okay. If you could just kind of tell us what it is and how you know that you're the only person in all of history that has a pre-existence, that would be cool.
Okay. I'll just like tell you my story. Oh, but I do want to apologize to Eric and Andrew, I think that's his name, for my last talk I did with them. I missed and told him like, they don't understand it, and I didn't mean it that way because of, you know, he said it was like nonsense, and I didn't want him to be like, you know, pretty much have animosity against me for it, like that lack of understanding. But I just want him to know, like, if you don't understand something, don't just say it's nonsense, because that just makes you more of a lack of understanding things.
That's nonsense. Sorry, it was an easy joke. I had to say it. Go ahead, tell us your story, Marco.
Okay, the story of my pre-existence. Before time and space came into existence, I spoke life into existence. And then that's when I met God. Me and God had a race to be God, but it was like he was more better. Like he knew everything. He could see everything. I was never better than him. Pretty much how it is.
So, Markel, can I ask some
God
questions?
God is something. Hold on, let me finish the story for you.
Well, no,
I don't want to get distracted.
No, because if there's not clarity at the beginning, then telling the rest of the story isn't going to matter. So you're saying before time and space began, you spoke life into existence.
Yes.
And then there was a competition between you and God about who got to be God. Did I catch that correctly?
Yes.
Was it a fiddle contest? I'm just curious.
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, it was a fiddle contest? So no, all right, let me get to the first problem. You say before time and space began, you spoke life into existence. How could you do that if there wasn't time? Because speaking requires time.
No, that's why I say I want to just speak on it so I don't get distracted.
Well, I don't care if you get distracted. If what you're going to say it appears to be everybody, you know, if you're going to make claims that you can't demonstrate and that fly in the face of logic and reason and understanding, then it would be right for someone to say, maybe not. I wouldn't say this is nonsense because it's not gobbledygook. I'm understanding the words you're saying. It's just that the situation you're describing is something for which I don't see any evidence and I don't see any way for it to be possible. How could something happen without time? How could an action take place without time?
Okay. And that's why I'm sorry to bother you on this, but that's why I wanted to explain it like as I go. I'm gonna explain it to you. So just to answer your question. I'm gonna answer your question. Just to answer your question. Okay. I spoke life before time came into existence. So I always existed. I never like had a beginning. I always existed. But God existence, I don't know how it came into existence. I will never know. I can never tell you that. But I can tell you how it was like how life came into existence. I spoke life into existence before time and space.
How could there be life? How could there be life before time and space?
Because I've spoken into existence.
No,
that's the origin of life.
That's like saying you invented measurement before there was any way to measure.
And that's when it comes to like something that's more of an ego. It's just something I can do. It's something that and that's when you say I'm the only one with a pre-existence. That's why I say yes, because it's something that becomes more than a consciousness. It becomes more than an ego. It becomes more than like a human can even understand. So that's why I want to break it down.
Are you a human?
I was sent into a human. My human is like existence body.
Are you human or not? Are you human or not?
I'm human. I'm in a human body. Yes.
So that means you can't understand it either.
No, I completely understand.
You said a human can't
understand. I did not start off as a human being.
Okay. If you can understand it, why is it that you can't explain it? And why is it that you don't see a problem with claiming you did temporal things in the absence of time?
Because I'm explaining it to you.
No, you're not. Okay. I see why you think the other guy won.
Right.
All right. So we got 15 minutes left before we're going to have to hard call it. Here we have Amir in New Jersey, who says that COVID-19 is the mark of the beast.
Yeah, hey guys, what up? So it does have me wondering this, and it has me wondering if the mark of the beast, you know, aka the devil, can be proven, then does that mean by default God can be proven? There are a lot of eerie similarities that are rolling out with COVID-19, with different steps that are being taken to combat it. I think one of the latest, you got Google and Apple teaming up, contact tracing. I don't know, is Google and Apple the two beasts that are spoken of in Revelations? Maybe yes, maybe no. We have the forced flu vaccine that is being fast-tracked. Everybody has to have it. Basically, I'm talking about the things that are being implemented in society. Society's being conditioned right now to have certain things, do certain things in order to return to their normal life or some facsimile of a normal life. You guys are pretty savvy on the Bible and things, probably a lot more savvy than me. I just got some crash course Bible studies back in my 20s and teens. I'm sure you guys probably know what the Bible has to say about Mark of the Beast, buy, trade, sell. I could talk about Andrew Cuomo as well as my own governor, Phil Murphy.
Hang on. You're saying that COVID-19 is the mark of the beast. So by that reasoning, everybody would have to have COVID-19 or else they wouldn't be able to buy or sell.
No, that's not what I said. I said COVID-19 might be the measures for combating it.
That's not what you said at the beginning of the call. That's not what you said to the call screener. But
that's what I did. Sure enough.
All right. Thanks. We'll move on. I'm baffled at, you know, you guys might know the Bible better than me and you might be able to know about the mark of the beast. And I think COVID-19 is the mark of the beast. And here's what we're going to have. Oh my God. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. Congratulations. When you have good evidence that it is something, call us then.
Yeah. That maybe it is. Maybe it's not is sort of an interesting little hand wave way of making an argument or supposing a position, isn't it?
Yeah. It's really, really strange. We have Greg in Florida with Mark 123 Ministries wanting to know why we think we're here. Is that right, Greg?
Right on. Yeah. Thanks for taking the call. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm coming in okay? Yeah?
So is that your question? Why do we think we're here?
No, I mean, yeah, I guess it's like a general question, but I guess on face value, you know, I used to be an atheist. I'll give you just a quick little background here, 2 seconds. I used to be an atheist. Started asking those big questions like who, what, where, when, and why. Then did some study and I don't know, everything just kind of kept leading me back to this ancient book. And to me, it's a profound text. I think it's a lot different than all the other books I've ever read and learned about. And that's all where our knowledge comes
book?
From.
Which book?
But yeah, essentially the question is why do you think we're here? Why are human beings on Earth?
Greg, which book are you talking about?
Dime Store Bible. Walk in, get it, the KJV Bible. I think King James did a really good job writing that one. You know, he used pretty interesting.
Just because his name's on it, King James himself did not fucking write it.
Oh, but he used the greatest scholars of the time to help him write it. But I digress. I mean, why don't we get back to the question that I asked the call screener?
Sure. Nick, why are we here?
I'm here right now because the governor has a shelter in place order. Otherwise, I'd probably be out going to the movies or something. Why we're here is such a is really one of the questions that I'm not super interested in. I'm much more interested in what are we doing now that we're here? What are we doing with the lives that we have? But the simplest answer to why we're here is millennia, millions, billions of years of evolution. Excuse me. That have gotten us to the place where we're able to ask that question. That's sort of the simplest big answer. The short answer is I'm here because I was adopted and adopted by a nice family in Michigan that raised me and sent me to school. And then I was fortunate enough to work in politics and then end up where I am now, where all the sum of the experiences and the things that happened to us. That's why I'm here. I can't really speak for everybody else.
The problem with Greg's question is that it assumes a particular category of answer. It assumes that there is some purpose or intent. It's like saying, if God didn't create the universe, who did? And that assumes that it's a who rather than what is a better question, which is what is the explanation for the universe? And so if you ask me, Matt, what is the intended purpose for your existence? My answer is, there isn't any. The universe doesn't care about me. My life has whatever intent and purpose I imbue it with, and that's it.
Yeah, why are you here, Debbie?
You said you got to be on atheist experience.
Go ahead, Debbie. I was going to interject, but if you want to,
yeah, go ahead,
Debbie. Comment.
I shouldn't even say almost. It seems embedded in what you're presenting is this contrast between the Bible making sense as something that explains why we're here and us having some other reason from some atheistic and materialist or whatever perspective. And firstly, the Bible makes no sense for explaining why we're here. It has a mishmash of stories from all over the place. I mean, I was raised Catholic, so I already didn't have a firm belief in the Bible being literally true. Sorry, Protestants. But just didn't make any sense. Like, the Catholics don't believe that. You know, they think that the beginning stories are stories. But I don't see any real ability to take the Bible seriously and see it as something that explains why we're here, to be honest, having read the Bible.
Maybe so, Greg.
Yeah, I would be curious about.
Greg, why are we here?
Why are we here? Well, I asked a very wise person. And by the way, you guys gave great answers. I think it's a really interesting dialogue, and it's going on. I mean, there's 100-year-old guys debating about this stuff, you know, people debating about it. So obviously it's a very interesting question. But I had a wise
person. Can I just note, I don't think it's interesting. You know? I don't know.
Right. Okay. No, I
really
agree.
Don't. I did when I was like six, and then I really didn't anymore. I really accepted some other way of thinking about, like, I am here, and, you know, also, like, how big the freaking universe is and how small humans are. And then I think my ego about why we're here was just, it's gone.
Yeah.
So, sorry, I wanted to say that.
I was just going to say it's to worship. That's what I was once told.
So
that was a pretty profound answer to that question.
Right. So you ask the question, why are humans here? And you think that the profound answer that you're willing to accept is the most likely correct one, is that we are here to worship.
Worship. What do we worship is the question behind the question. But yes, worship. Right.
Yeah. I have zero interest in worship, and anything that was remotely deserving of worship could never expect or demand it, because that automatically disqualifies it from being worthy of worship.
But Matt, to a certain extent, you know, don't you worship certain things? Your partner, oxygen helps you live and breathe. I mean, certain things in this earth that you worship and appreciate.
Okay, so you have a very loose usage of the term worship. I don't worship oxygen. Am I dependent upon oxygen? You bet. But I don't worship.
The problem with worshiping oxygen is when you light those prayer candles, you're just destroying oxygen and sucking it all out of the room. And so it's
a sacrifice, like Jesus.
Yeah, you have to sacrifice oxygen to worship. You
sacrifice it to itself.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
I have those candles.
You can make a case that, oh, there's all kinds of things that we worship, but And even if I were to agree with you and say, okay, under your incredibly loose definition, I worship my girlfriend. Okay. That doesn't mean that that's what my intended purpose on life is to worship. And when you include things like oxygen, I don't worship oxygen. I don't get up in the morning and go, oh man, oxygen, you are so awesome. Please let me prostrate myself to you, oxygen. Thank you for filling my lungs and then my bloodstream and allowing my brain to work. That's bizarre.
But you express reverence. You express reverence and adoration, and to a certain extent. I mean, it doesn't have to be to a religious extent. But do we not admire the fact or the way oxygen works? You know, the mechanics sure. of it all.
Sure, but you've now gone from worship to admire.
I was going
to
say, Greg, do you admire?
Well, no, it's not.
No, it's not. Do you admire the sacred architecture of Islam, for example? I think I could walk into the Hagia Sophia and say, wow, this is it's a marvel, or the pyramids, and say, wow, I marvel at the ingenuity of this. Are you worshiping those things? And if so, I think you have some things that you need to address with one of those commandments.
Well, my stance is, and I thought I was clear, and it was just, I worship God. Jesus Christ is the ultimate thing worthy of worship that created everything, if God created everything. As far so as, all the other religions and the pyramids, that's another whole ball of wax, but,
So when I go, I'm reluctant to go to a dictionary because dictionaries describe usage. They're not authorities on what words mean because language is our plaything. But when I go to like Merriam-Webster, the definition of worship is to honor or show reverence for a divine being or supernatural power, or to regard with great or extravagant respect, honor, or devotion. It doesn't just say admire. It doesn't, and it's, I don't have great, extravagant respect, honor, or devotion. But even if we were to grant all that, to say, okay, you're right, Greg, I worship oxygen. How could you make a case that that's what my purpose is supposed to be, that that's why I'm here? I am here to worship oxygen.
I didn't say you were here to worship oxygen. Those are your words.
Okay. How could you possibly argue that I'm here to worship anything, even if I did worship something?
I think there's degrees of worship. Let's put it that way. Well, just clearly, like there may be rank in heaven and rank in hell.
That's not what I'm asking. Let's assume for the sake of argument that you worship something and I worship something. How do you then demonstrate that because we do something, that is the intended reason that we are here?
Okay, and that's kind of the crux of the question, I guess. And I
imagine that.
I'm not saying I know everything. I think you're a very profound person. Obviously, you debated some of the greatest minds in religion.
And profane.
Really good job at it.
I want credit for both.
And I think I just stirred the pot a little bit, and that's good. And maybe we'll just leave it at that. But I do appreciate you guys taking the call here today. And I respect your work, Let's put it that way.
All right. Thanks. I would argue that you didn't stir the pot. I don't think any of us feel stirred. I think what you did is came on a show and said, hey, why do you guys think we're here? I think we're here to worship. And I can make a case that you adore something, and I'm going to call that worship. And somehow, when asked how that can possibly make my case, I'm just going to bow out and say, you guys are awesome.
Telephone equivalent of throwing a smoke bomb.
Yeah, I don't know that any, I don't know. I tell you what, because we're at 6 o'clock and we do have to wrap this up, I'm just going to go to Debbie first and then Nick. Tell us where people can find you, what you've got going on for American Atheists, and what we can expect in the near and far future.
Oh, you had to start with me?
I don't have to.
I'm on the internet now. I tweet occasionally at DebGod, random, those first three letters of my first name and the first three letters of my last name.
What? Is that where that came from?
Yeah. Yeah, what did you think it was?
That's what I always thought. It's just I always liked it because the first time I saw it, I was like, "Ooh, DebGod." Oh, that's her first and last name. But it's fun.
It was a weird thing on a dating profile this one time when someone was like, "You must be really religious," and I was like, "Why would you think that?" Oh, you have God in your name. Oh,
Oh, I do.
I didn't even, you know, that's just been part of my name for so long. It didn't cross my mind that that was something special.
I'm actually surprised that Greg didn't suggest that we worship ourselves or that we worship reason or that
I was waiting for that, actually.
Those are much harder to defend.
Yeah.
If I'm going to worship anything, it's going to be the truth as a concept. That's probably as close as I can get.
Yeah, agreed. So, yeah, I'm on Twitter. I work at American Atheists. We're based in New Jersey. There's a lot of projects. I think one of the things we're working on overhauling, besides, you know, we're rolling out some convention things in the future, online presentations and things. We are working on a new website and some different online resources for people. We've been cleaning up our affiliates listing, and we've been doing webinars for affiliate group leaders. So I'm excited about some of the development on our community side, helping provide better trainings for group leaders and for local activists to get involved and do something and be more effective where they are. So that's what I'm going to be working on with other people over the next few months.
All right. And Nick, president of American Atheists. It's always fun. It's extra fun for me to say that. And thank you, by the way, for the side joke during the game night that made me almost fall out of my chair.
I got a couple of text messages from a few people internally right after that. So, yeah, you're welcome. you can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter is not Nick Fish because at Nick Fish was taken. So I am not Nick Fish, but, you know, whatever. Unfortunately, the guy that has Nick Fish is both, I think he's French-Canadian and extremely religious. So I don't know that there would be any sort of exchange that could happen there as a favor, sadly, but that's all right. That's where you can follow me there. I share lots of stuff with, you know, what we're doing at American Atheist, but also just random, news and commentary about things happening in the world. Big projects that I'm excited about obviously will be the stuff that we're doing to kind of take the place of, or supplement what we would have done with our conference. We'll have some more announcements about that shortly. Keep an eye out for the report from the state of the secular survey. Really, really stoked about how well that went. Like I said, our original goal was to have about 10,000 responses. We ended up with almost 35,000, and we did that in less than 2 weeks. The original field time was supposed to be 4. So I really want to commend the work that was done by our other vice president, Allison Gill, in coordinating that, as well as our team of researchers and all of our staff and all of our partners that helped get the word out, including ACA, including you know, all of the folks that work in the secular community, the American Humanist Association, Freedom from Religion Foundation, secular students, just everybody did a really fantastic job of getting everybody to take that. It was truly fantastic watching all those numbers come in. And the most important thing is I want to thank all of our volunteers and our local volunteers, our state directors, and our group leaders that got the word out and really went above and beyond in telling us about how they experienced being an atheist, being non-religious in their communities. We had over a third of the people who took the survey actually provided what we call qualitative data, meaning they answered kind of open-ended questions at the end of the survey to give us a little bit of an insight into how they've experienced their lack of religion, their atheism in their communities. And that's allowed us to really dig in and add some important detail and color to the data. And it's actually a data set that we'll be able to dig through for years to come. And so if you participated in that, thank you so much. If you're a member of American Atheists, you made that possible. You made that survey happen. And so I want to thank everybody who has joined, donated, and supported our work over the last couple of years. We really do appreciate it. And if you're not yet a member, atheists.org/join will get you there.
Yep. I want to thank both of you for being here today on Easter Sunday, when we would normally all be at a convention together. I will see you guys virtually this weekend for the board meeting, and look forward to next year in Phoenix. The handful of people that I need to thank grows every day. We can put up like the crew cam. I'm thinking we can put up the crew cam. There is somebody who drove down to the building in a panic to set everything up just in case Mark couldn't get back online. He's there drinking my Coke Zeros.
Oh, that's
and, cool. And that's very, and there's Vern. You can see Vern in the background. we've got this virtual cascade.
Yeah.
Somewhere there's a wild Mark Vandenberg out there. I caught a little glimpse of Paul's screen and calls for us. Our team has just been outstanding. Vern has virtually been killing himself. Mark and Greg and a bunch of others have been working on graphics. They set up the whole game night thing, which is going to air. A rebroadcast of last night's game night is going to air immediately following this episode. And I'm heading off to do another show at around 7 p.m. You guys, everybody watching, we appreciate your support, both with the Super Chat stuff from Maximilian and others, to the support on patreon.com/theatheistexperience. The atheist community of Austin, despite this stay-at-home order, is continuing to produce content, and we are continuing to work towards bettering both our production and the community and be able to do any of this. We're building up a Go rig that we've been talking about for a while, and this situation has put us in a spot where, you know what, it'd be really cool to just be able to have a box that we take to American Atheist to do something live from there, to be at some other convention, to help the Secular Student Alliance. And because you mentioned the SSA, I want to remind people that I believe it's this Thursday, the 16th, Secular Student Alliance is having basically Ask an Atheist Day, and they're wanting people to get on social media and help promote this and do Ask an Atheist. I'm going to do a twitch.tv/MattDillahunty live stream on the 16th, where it's just going to be Ask an Atheist, and I'll probably be playing games too because I'm a junkie. But you can call in and ask an atheist there. So thank you everybody for tuning in. Thanks to all of our volunteers. A special thank you to Nick and Debbie for coming down and doing this, and for Allison and Sam for helping out with the game stuff, which you're going to watch right after this. Bye-bye.